Hello, everyone. It's great to see you. Hello, Mary Beth. And I hope all of you guys are well and healthy and all you loved ones, considering the circumstances. It's great to be here and talking about a very important topic. They will be supporting the work the Barry and the city are doing. So I'm calling the order to start the meeting and welcome you all to have this amazing conversation today.
Great. Thank you, Omar. And Paul Jensen is now joining us as well. So you will see him on the call momentarily. Let me just wait for him to become visible. Okay, Paul, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. So I would like to do a quick roll call, which is pretty easy since I can see everybody and know who's not here, but just for formality, because this is being audio recorded. So DJ Allison is actually just logging in right now. I'll come back to him. Mary Beth Bushy.
Is present.
Okay, Bill Carney.
I'm here.
Omar Carrera, we know you're here. Berenice Davidson is muted, but I can see her. Okay. So Eleanor Huang is going to join us in progress. She also had a virtual music lesson that was going to end during this call. So she will be entering the call in the next half hour or so. Linda Jackson.
Here.
Bonnie Marmer.
Here.
Kate Powers. Kate is not yet on the call. Okay. Karen Strolia. I know Karen is here.
Present. Yeah. Hi.
Okay. Cecilia Zamora.
Here.
Great. I also wanted to introduce two folks who you may not recognize. Heather Imboden is with Communities in Collaboration. They are a community engagement firm that the city has retained to help with Spanish language outreach as part of the general plan update. And Ricardo Huerta Nino, who is on the faculty at UC Berkeley in the Department of City and Regional Planning, who is also someone who's really worked with us closely on doing outreach to the Spanish-speaking community in partnership with Canal Alliance. And I will ask Ricardo to chime in just a moment. I wanted to, before we get into the agenda, just to go quickly through some ground rules. First is that the meeting is, by the way, DJ Allison, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, you joined while we were doing roll call, so we got you down. The meeting is being recorded. For the purposes of this discussion, I think we can go by just raising your hand if you would like to speak. Omar will be serving as our chair during this meeting. We are asking that if you're not a committee member, that you hold comments till the end when we have a dedicated time on the agenda. I don't think that's going to be an issue at this point, but if folks join us in progress, we'll make note of that. We do have time for public comment at the end. We are going to start by asking Ricardo to walk us through a survey that was done by he and Communities in Collaboration in partnership with Canal Alliance and some of what we learned through that survey. And then have some Q&A about that. And then Omar is going to share with us some perspectives on how COVID-19 has really shined a light on the issues that we're talking about here on this meeting with respect to equity and inclusion, and segue really as we can to a conversation about how General Plan 2040 can address those issues on a broader, more systemic level, both in this element that we're talking about today and any other elements of the plan. That's a lot to unload in 1 hour, and we've already used 7 minutes. So I'm going to turn it over to Ricardo to walk us through the survey, and then we'll go from there. So Ricardo, thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. I hope you're all doing well, that your families are safe and healthy. Barry indicated there's about 10 minutes for this discussion. And so I'll begin by saying that the issues and the opportunities that came up in the work that we did, part of which is this survey, but there's much more to it, that this work really requires a separate process, separate engagement. It probably needs the leadership of folks that are on this call now, but there needs much more follow-up. So I want to also begin by saying that 10 minutes is really not enough to cover everything. But the idea, I think, Barry had was that this is the kind of data, the kind of process, the kind of leadership that is required to inform the equity chapter of equity element of the general plan. So what we need is we need to have better connections and better engagement, more effective engagement from various communities, in this case, the Latino community in the Canal District, in order to have more effective and democratic input into those processes, as well as other related activities and challenges within the community. So again, it should be a separate process. This is to inform that the element. And so that's the reason we wanted to share with you this work today. So as Barry's summary piece that he sent out to you a couple of days ago about the survey indicated, this was a part of an effort to do outreach around the general plan and to get the Latino community to participate in ways that were much more effective than what we had in October of 2018. I think Ms. Davidson, who's on the call, was there. Omar was there. And what we saw was that the structures of traditional outreach and engagement for planning purposes in the community just did not really reach the Latino community. So we tried different strategies. We did have the opportunity to present that day, just the background here very briefly, a couple of hours presentation of what the general plan is, what the elements are, how people participate, what the limitations are. And the folks that were in the room, the handful that were able to make it, found it very useful. So we converted that to part of the process that we engage with this leadership team of 12 folks. So we were able to build an amazing partnership with them and build capacity and build their understanding of the general plan. And we actually posted that online for people to share. And so that's sort of a quick background. I just want to speak a couple more minutes and then I'll open it up to questions because it might be more useful to manage it that way. So a couple of things. Overall, I think what we realized that this was an amazing partnership, amazing leadership and learning and capacity building opportunity that hadn't been done before. The folks represent a leadership team in the community, regular folks without professional training and planning. We recognize that that was something that needed to be shared among the community. Most of us who went to high school in the United States or even abroad and had higher education have exposure to the relationship between city government and its citizenship and what possibilities there are. Folks that are in the community don't have that background, don't have that formal education. So we went over zoning maps. We talked about the general plan, the various elements. We talked about the limitations of what a plan can do and what the processes are. So it was really, and Omar can speak to this, I'm sure, from his perspective, but I thought it was very, very useful, very helpful to learn the language of planning, to learn its purposes and the processes. The other takeaway, overall takeaway, is it was an equity, a practice in equity itself, because what we realized, again, is that the traditional approach just was not enough to reach folks. So it was actually a practice of equity to actually do that. And then the other overall takeaway is that key to this, to the engagement, ongoing engagement and participation, community outreach, community building, is the social media aspect of it. And that's something that Canal Alliance has really done really, really well. So we had, I think, like 1,500 hits on just one small talk that we did on a Facebook live. And that's significant. And actually, it's probably more. I don't remember what the final count was. So just four highlights and two key outcomes, if you'll bear with me here. So number one is this need for innovative approaches to build capacity and arrange awareness and engagement. That's something that we definitely found. This is sort of for the ongoing. The need for expertise in urban planning and culturally responsive approaches. So we do need to build that awareness and build that language among folks so that they can, in fact, engage. And this is not just for the general plan. This is overall civic engagement kinds of work. Three, that there's this need for ongoing capacity building and partnerships with community organizations. So that was a huge piece of the success, was working through the Canal Alliance and their existing networks and their legitimacy. Four, this ongoing need for, this is my view, this is not, I don't know how other folks feel, but there was within the leadership team the sense for this need for ongoing formalized strategic and accountable partnerships with city staff and county agencies. So for example, low-hanging fruit may be folks are ready to help lend a hand with picking up trash, and that's something that they named as a high priority for them. They just need the dump trucks and the, you know, the big dumpsters and the sort of resources that the city might be able to provide, which might be a low-hanging fruit to kind of show a goodwill approach. And key outcomes, I think, one is this willingness that we see among people. They want to help. They want to be part of the solution. They're not just looking out for a handout, but there's an opportunity to tap into that willingness and human power to have them have agency in their own solutions. And perhaps the most important key outcome, I think, for this process has been this opportunity to create a neighborhood-specific plan within this work so that it's very specific to the ways in which this canal community sees its priorities and opportunities. So parking, cleanliness, street lighting, and of course, housing being a major, major issue. So this neighborhood-specific plan, a lot of hopes are being put on that as an opportunity to address very specifically how the canal district is different from the rest of San Rafael and what opportunities there might be connected to that. So with that, I'll stop and open it up for questions.
I'll start off with a question. Can you give us a little background on who the respondents actually were and what outreach? And you mentioned the social media. Were they one people that you reached through social media, or was it a combination of different methods to get the groups that actually responded to the survey?
Yes, thank you. The leadership team decided that it was going to be primarily person-to-person outreach. So each of them took a stack of the surveys and conducted them across the canal area. So at schools, at markets, at churches, on the streets, school buses. So it was really folks who lived in the community, who live in the community and were in that community. So
this is good. This is good.
Say that again.
Sorry, I just put Paul on mute. He was he took a phone call, so we're good.
Okay. I was happy for the praise from Paul that this is good. Yeah. So it was regular folks, one-on-one, direct contact. They felt that was the best, partly as well because the questions we were asking might be familiar to folks who have lived in the U.S., part of, you know, mainstream culture, maybe went to high school and had civics, but folks from other countries where perhaps responsiveness from city government wasn't there, or they're from small towns or hamlets where that awareness just wasn't part of their reality. So there was an opportunity or need for folks who were doing the interviews to actually translate, this is what we mean by these. Even though we tried to make it as accessible as possible, there was still a need for kind of coaching folks through what that things meant.
Cecilia, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question on the about the quality of life part. When you talk about the canal park, is that the canal pickleweed park? Is that what that was? Canal park?
Yeah, that would be pickleweed park.
Okay. And then my sort of just a comment is I'm not surprised given what Ricardo just said about the community services such as police and such being lower, since they may not have had that experience of having that kind of service. But I think I'm really surprised about the availability of bilingual services in the canal. So I'm not sure if that's because it's mostly a monolingual audience. I'm not sure. Maybe Omar can comment on that. I don't know.
Yeah. Those are the type of questions that are very hard to understand from a survey, right? Linda, you want to add to that?
Well, it might be a reflection that so many of the respondents have children. And in the school district, we provide everything that goes out. I'm on the school board in San Rafael. So everything that goes out in English and Spanish. So that could reflect that. On that, Cecilia. I was intrigued by this quality of life as well. You know, when you think that 20% of any group, more or less, Masalmenos, are don't like what's going on, we don't have a single category here that is under, almost 25% at least not really satisfied. I would say somewhat satisfied is probably somewhat dissatisfied. so it just is a reflection of the challenges, the disadvantages in the community. The question I have, Omar and Fernando, is the transferability of these results to other parts of San Rafael where low-income people live, where other immigrants live from other areas, and specifically, name Lincoln Avenue, anywhere where there's really apartments, but Lincoln Avenue, Gerstle Park, Montecito, parts of Terralinda, Civic Center. So I just wonder about the transferability of these results.
Omar, if you want to speak specifically, I would say my response to that is we were limited in time, we were limited in scope, we were limited in resources, all of that. So I was pushing for a broader scope because a canal always is sort of looked at as the place, but we know there are pockets in other places, not only San Rafael, but throughout the county, and it needs to be much more holistic. So we did what we could. I think what we're saying is this learning is the beginning. This learning is also what folks have been talking about as targeted universalism, that if we were able to raise the floor in the canal in the same ways we were able to raise the floor in these other pockets, that they're transferable in the sense that we know that there are universal struggles around housing, livable wage, those kinds of things. So I think it's enough to get us started. And I think it's enough to say, and I think we've been having these conversations where we were saying, well, how do we connect with other neighborhoods that have a high, both Latino, but also low income folks? And where is that partnership available?
Yeah, and Barry, you can just correct us, but we were doing an analysis by neighborhood, right? So this was more about the canal neighborhood than where Latinos are within San Rafael. That was the approach, right, to this exercise.
Yeah, a lot of the feedback that we're getting is actually going into the neighborhoods element of the general plan for specific recommendations for the canal community. But also kind of laying the groundwork for a future plan that will just focus on East San Rafael and the canal too. So I think this is teeing us up to do some more focused planning in that area. But Linda, you do raise a really important point, which is that, you know, it's a citywide plan that we're preparing now. And so to the extent we can have the pulse of the whole city, that would be better. That would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Recognize that exists. Yeah. So at Coleman School, you know, half the kids come are Latino or English language learners, and they come from Montecito and
right.
Avenue. So,
yeah. Cecilia, you have a question.
Yeah, I just wanted to agree with Linda on this because I do think that some of the questions will need to be tweaked depending on the neighborhood that you go to. You know, you find in the canal neighborhood, and you guys probably know this more than anything from working there, it's more of a newcomer neighborhood, and the outlying areas in San Rafael and other parts of Marin are, you know, can be even first and second generation families, but they could still have a low income socioeconomic or middle income socioeconomic. So I think that some of these questions, as we go out into the other neighborhoods, can be tweaked in a different way. And then I wanted to just illustrate, like Terralinda High School, for instance, had a huge increase in Latino students in the last couple of years. So you know that there's a lot of kids that are graduating from Santa Venetia, and there, you know, there's a lot of areas besides the canal. But you know, as Omar says, and as you're acknowledging, Barry, it's, you know, neighborhood focus right now, and it's a good one because it's definitely the most need.
Okay, I think Kate Powers used the hand up symbol a minute ago. I don't know if Kate, if you had a question before we move on. Maybe not. Linda has another.
Well, and Omar, this is the hard one. This is really hard. So the very first one on how satisfied are you is the cleanliness of the streets and the state of the streets in the canal. And you might know, or Paul will remember, way back in the 90s, I did a similar kind of outreach, being a parent leader at San Pedro School and speaking Spanish. It was using the living room conversations technique. And a number of these same issues came up then, and the city council at the time responded to them. And the cleanliness of the streets, lead was high, along with concerns about, far higher about police not being responsive. But that cleanliness of the streets led to the parking program that existed in the canal that was recently removed. And the purpose of that was to allow for the street cleaners to come through. And so I was just intrigued with this response. I know it's like the unintended consequence of a programmatic change. And it's just so sad to see, because I know that the parking, the towing program was horrible for families. So it just shows how challenging some of these issues are, and how you have to have everyone at the table, like Ricardo's saying, to try to figure out what the right response. But it's sad to see it rising there still.
I think that goes back just to the importance of bringing people to say, okay, it's important for you to keep your neighborhood clean. How can we do it in a more equitable way than just maybe replicating what worked for other neighborhoods, right? When people have access to information, when people can speak the language, when people have maybe the money to do things that others can. So when we use one solution for all, that's when we find problems. It's not that people in the canal don't appreciate to have the neighborhood clean or safe. It's just how we do it is, I think, what we're looking for.
Absolutely.
Oh, hey, Ricardo.
Thank you. I know we're going to coming up on 20 minutes on this conversation, so I do want to respect your time. I think the only thing I wanted to make sure that we mentioned and we framed this work is, when we first started, this was not done during a pandemic. We first started, survey was well and done, after that. We have the pandemic situation. I think that part of what we need to, that I would suggest that folks on the call take away from this is also to think about, we may not be in the worst of the effects of the pandemic in the canal community overall, but in the canal community. And these are folks who are at the base, at the core of the local economy for not only Santa Fe, but a few other cities. And so there may be a need and opportunity to quickly mobilize around what needs to be done and how we raise the floor and how we take care of people in a framework that says this is not a top-down charity-based approach that we need to take. It is, in fact, saving the floor, the base, the core, the foundation of the local economy on which we all depend, and being proactive rather than waiting till June, July, August, where we may or may not be out of it. But even then, folks trying to come back and be financially stable is going to be very, very difficult. So I just want to put it out in this group, because it is the equity group, to think about how does the pandemic and the unequal impact that it's having on local low-income communities, how is that going to affect the economy locally and the structure locally and the infrastructure? And I want to say, from a planning perspective, this was not a big one. This was not the big one. It wasn't the big earthquake. Our bridges are still up. Our roads are still open. Our electricity is still going. We have communication. We have access to food. You know, so thinking about, because part of the full report that maybe you'll get a copy of talks about how much folks are aware of what the emergency issues are: sea level rise, smoke from fires, fires themselves. The folks are aware of these things. There just isn't the capacity to actually be prepared around those things. So this pandemic opens up a portal of opportunity for us to think about moving quickly around, being proactive in the response around housing, I think number one, so that workers aren't displaced, and then trying to get them back into the community, back into their jobs to sustain the economy will be much more difficult than trying to figure out a proactive way to keep them in place now.
Bill, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I was wondering, Ricardo, if you could follow up with some particular examples of what that might look like.
My approach has always been that it has to be a partnership, so it'd be difficult to say. So I need to, we need to find out what there is available with regards to resources and willingness from the city and from the county, number one, and then having the local leadership from organizations like the Canal Alliance to kind of build that. So I wouldn't venture a guess on that because we've never been where we are. We need to figure out what's the willingness of local leadership to extend a moratorium or to, you know, Omar has been talking about how some of this relief is a pass through low-income folks to well-endowed folks through the rent subsidies and these kinds of things. So trying to figure out what's the willingness to hold on to that dollar longer in the community, for example. And so I don't have any easy answers, Bill, but I do think that the approach is in short order, a partnership that includes key players, including nonprofits who are representing these interests of the local community.
Cecilia.
Yeah, I just had a quick clarification for Barry that sort of this speaks to. Is the entire 2040 vision team actually doing the same thing, like throwing the COVID-19 over, you know, since it's here now, over our thinking of the last year or so? Like making that kind of a first pass?
Yes. I mean, I won't say that we're rewriting the entire general plan based on what is going on now, but certainly in the beginning of the plan and the introduction and the organizing principles, I think we have to acknowledge what we're experiencing now, what the ramifications are, and how we can be prepared in the future and how this might shape some of our decisions. But I think it is more of kind of a structural question that's acknowledged at the beginning of the plan rather than something that requires us to rewrite everything that we've done. I mean, things like the design of public transit and things like that, I think they work their way into the plan. And we will be acknowledging that and speaking about that in the various elements.
Then I just had another comment, and this might be to Omar and Linda, because you're really involved in some of these organizations, but isn't there a fair amount of stuff going on right now at the nonprofit, local community level of addressing some of the things that Ricardo's talking about, that not necessarily would come from this particular group, but is already happening in some other areas?
You mean specifically in response to the pandemic?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the response is already taking place.
We'll see what Omar can weigh in. I think there's a lot of what I'm in right now is with the kids and with older adults. And I think for older adults, it's a good thing. We all say it's a good thing we're living in Marin. It still worries about food and medication and that kind of thing. But for the families, though, it's really a challenge right now because of the living in small quarters. You're not supposed to be outside, limits on being outside, the worries about health and getting sick, I think just can't be compared with what older people are going through. So, and then just worried about being able to have a place to live next month, a roof over the head of my family, and then the worries about, abuse that might be going on. There has been an increase. So there's a lot of things that have come to light that people are watching. Ricardo, what I heard you hinting at was that when we're looking at phase one and phase two, that we're looking at what really helps the lowest income workers be able to keep that floor going, that, landscapers are the first ones out there, and, the caregivers are the first ones out there, and there are protocols so that those people can be safe as they go back to work and the people around them are safe. That only happens if those folks are at the table, at the planning table with the health officials, and I'm not sure that's happening. Omar may know. I where I'm at, I'm not seeing it, so that's something that we're starting to talk about. Is who's at the table of putting these things, these plans together. And it's not just the pandemic, it would be for any kind of activity. And there's policies in this draft that talk to that inclusion.
Can I just add that what I'm seeing outside, the work that I'm doing outside of Summerfell, is folks are scrambling, they're moving money around, They're able to access food banks, so the food is pretty stable, not the best, pretty stable, but it's the rent. And so they were able to make rent last in April, scrambling. They probably will be able to figure out a way barely for May, but that's it. That's as far as the money that can be moved around, as far as I can see, is going to go. And so having a moratorium for 3 months, that's not really helpful. As you all know, you have to pay 4 months, you know. And so that, I think, is the beginning, the starting point for me, is to say, how do we make sure that folks who are in the community now can stay in the community? Because when you need them to go back to work, they need to be ready to go back to work to help build up that local economy.
And just to add from my perspective, I did, I wrote an article that was in the IJ. I don't know if you guys have a chance to read it. I'm really presenting the perspective that what I think the inequities that we are dealing right now existed before COVID-19. When I was advocating for 15 years, there are kids in the canal, they are not connected to the internet. Everybody was like, oh, they're not connected. Until COVID-19 came, and then suddenly we moved to distant learning, and then people realized that, oh, that's what you meant by not being connected. The kids are not going to be able to learn, right? When we're talking about people not making enough money to survive in Marin County and had to work in 2 or 3 jobs just to pay the bills, suddenly COVID-19 takes place, and this crisis is different than the one in 2008, because in 2008, there were no jobs. Right now, people really want to go work to pay the bills, but we want them to stay home. But if they're not able to make the money on a daily basis to survive, how are they going to do it? Are we having an emergency fund that we're supporting? So to answer Cecilia's question, the short answer is no. It's not enough, everything that is happening, in comparison to the need that is in the community. It's just, to me, it's just water drops in the bucket of the need. The high demand for services is huge and continues to it. The policies that we implemented in the county in terms of moratorium and evictions is not close to enough what we need. I was advocating for a moratorium on paying the rents. I'm against using the limited resources that we have in the county in philanthropy to pay the rent. The reason why, you know, one of the research that the city of San Rafael did about who owns most of the multifamily complexes in San Rafael where low-income communities are living are corporations. There are very few buildings that are owned by individuals that need that income to survive themselves. And those should be treated as an exception to that. But how much the county comes and put $500,000 to pay the rent, you help 100 people with rents of $2,500, $3,000, and then next month you need to come with another $500,000 just to help the same 100 people. So, and what we want right now with the shelter in place is making sure that people stay home for the well-being of all of us. So how's that gonna happen? That's gonna happen if people have cash in their hands to buy medicines, to buy food, to buy diapers, to buy the basics. And we want them to have cash in their hands because they're gonna be going to the local markets. They are close to the neighborhood to buy those supplies. And those local markets are gonna have money to maintain employed to some people from the community. And that's how the circle works to maintain a local economy alive. If we transfer that money to the corporations that own those buildings, that money is not going back to the local community, to the local economy. So transferring those few dollars just to corporations, I don't think is a solution. Now, right now, the crisis that we have is not a debt crisis or an economic crisis. Although we are in economic recession, right now what we're focusing is still in the public health crisis. We still, you know, we are not about, I think today or yesterday was the highest death toll in California in relation to the COVID-19. So we are just getting in the worst part of the first phase. They're talking about the second phase that's gonna come in the fall. So we're not even done with that crisis. Right now, worrying about people not being able to pay the rent, I think that paying the rent has becoming the second or third priority from my perspective. But of course, for people in the canal, it's still they wanna pay the rent because that's what I was advocating for the city is how we are educating the landlords that they cannot evict anyone. We are getting a lot of phone calls from people that are being harassed by the property managers, by the landlords, saying, if you don't pay, you're gonna be out, and I don't care, there's this eviction. We're talking about families that don't have the lease, family that maybe are renting a room. So they are like the invisible individuals for any policy that we develop. So those are the problems that we have in these communities. We create policies and we believe everybody's gonna follow. it was an article in the IJA highlighting how day laborers are not following the rules of the shelter in place. But who is hiring those day laborers? Are homeowners in Marin County. Those are the main employers for them. Small businesses are hiring. And why people are going to the streets? Because they need to eat. So if we want to pass this, we need to do more. We need to come up with stronger policies. We need to come up with more money, not to support the corporations, but to support individuals. I highlighted that in the article because that's exactly what we're doing. I think it's not enough. We have to do more.
There's a conversation about what we need to do about this today and what may be happening in a month from now if people are really moving their housing. That's a really powerful conversation we need to be having with about, you know, shelter on a large scale for people, our people in San Rafael, so that they have a safe place to live. If there's, the Board of Supervisors is looking at update or change, a little amendment to their bill, the resolution or ordinance that they passed a month ago about rents, that is another step in the right direction, but it's not going to pay the rent for everybody. And you're right. I mean, schools are setting up funds so that they can help families who are in the schools to be able to pay their rent. They're doing GoFundMe pages for that, because not just in the canal, but it's in other parts of the city that this is an issue. I don't know, Barry, if you want to pivot to talking about the draft plan, I'd be happy kick it off with a couple of comments.
Yes. Let me just, Kate Powers has a question. She just messaged me, and I just want to give her a chance to do that. And thank you, Linda. I would like to spend a little bit of time talking about the draft as soon as Kate is on here.
I'm sorry, I'm backlit. My question is, in terms of the process, Ricardo and Omar, that you undertook, it seems to me that advocacy is one aspect, but there's a need in the city, from my perspective, to have a staff member, sort of like Andrew Henning for homelessness, that connects the silos of, when I read the executive summary and looked at the challenges that the community identified in terms of transportation, those issues are Marin Transit. And Kate Collin is on that, I think is on that committee or on that board. I think having either a leadership group or a staff member at the city level that would be responsible for, in this case with COVID, addressing the emergencies with the advocacy groups, which Canal Alliance or and in the county's efforts to provide, looking for the small business opportunities to keep the small businesses that are still working for in the canal community up and running. It just seems like it's more than including goals in the general plan, but it's really about how is this captured in the land use element? How are zoning policies and land use decisions that really take this light that's been shown in terms of inequity and applies it to our general plan in our land use element, in our community development element, in our circulation element? Do we really want to build a lot of parking lots in the canal, or do we want to provide really efficient, effective transportation for those mapped out areas in the canal that really need it from A to B? So it seems, anyway, I just wanted to make that comment. I'll shut up now. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kate. If I could maybe just take a couple of minutes to provide a quick overview. I just want to also say we knew that because of the subject matter and the time that we have and the circumstances we're in, we were not going to take this hour to go line by line, page by page through the goals, policies, and programs. But I do want to point out, this is a new element of the general plan. It's one you haven't seen before, although a lot of the, some of the content is carried forward from the governance element and parts of the existing general plan. Some of the content is new and reflects both state law and guidance on how you address environmental justice in the general plan, which is now a requirement, and also the issues of equity and inclusion that we've been talking about for the last 45 minutes. We laid out six goals, and I just want to mention what they are, and then I'm going to ask maybe ask Linda to provide some initial comments and feedback. Thank you for segueing us. So the first really deals with community participation and meaningful participation and reaching out to all segments of the community. Second really looks at public health and environmental justice. Third looks at housing, and this was tricky because we have a whole element of the general plan that deals with housing, particularly housing affordability. So really this is kind of shining a light on housing equity issues. Access to services and facilities, which is another key issue, and then education and economic opportunity. The sixth goal is a little bit different than the others in that it deals with aging and captures the recommendations of age-friendly San Rafael. We're trying to incorporate that in the general plan, and in looking at the structure, this a discussion of equity, it appeared appropriate to address the needs of older adults in this context as well. So I would like to spend a little bit of time, we have 15 minutes or so on the call, to get some feedback on the draft that you have. Also want to encourage everybody to please provide written comments as you have with the other elements. Those have been extraordinarily helpful in us revising and editing the document. And in this case, especially since this is all new content, you don't have the old plan to say, well, we like the language in the old plan better, because this is all new. And so your input is really critical and important, both in the time we have today and in writing, hopefully by the end of the month, which is about a week away. So Linda, if you'd like to lead off with some comments or feedback, and others as well.
Yeah, I just have a few. I think I love this element. I think it's really exciting to see this coming to San Rafael. So just start off with that. I love, of course, the last goal dealing with age friendly, and then right before it, the one dealing with children. I was a little worried about the education one, but it all looks good to me. I know you have to have a fine line between now taking on a lot of new stuff. So when I read this, I do look to Paul for, you know, running it by all the city staff, because there's a lot in here. And especially now with the cutbacks that are foreseen over the next couple of years, really being judicious in how far we can go with some of this, but it's all good. I look at policy 1.4, which talks about community-based organizations and advocacy programs and collaborations. And then the next one on advisory committees, I want to be sure that we include aging. So we're coming up on about 30% of San Rafael's population is going to be over 60. And the whole immigrant population that's between 45, 55 in the lifetime of this plan is going to be joining that group. So we have, I want to be sure that they are named, older people are named, not just in that very last goal, but in other parts here to be included. I know the city's had a real effort to bring in younger people on advisory committees, but we need to also not do that at the expense of the voice of older people. And there's some discussion in here about racism and equity understanding, and I like to add ageism into that, to be able to look through the lens of aging equity for older people who are living in San Rafael and making sure that they have the same opportunities to live well as they grow older. And finally, in goal four, there's mention of low income and immigrants. I'd like to add people of color to that. And then there's two transportation things. I'm not sure quite how they fit in, Barry, so I'll just throw them at you. One of them is, given the air quality concerns in the canal, that there'd be a real serious promotion for electric vehicle charging stations. And how that's done, I don't know, but I think it would make a difference. We see it now in our communities with quiet, the quiet, and what a difference it makes. And the other one is 580 AM westbound for people who work here. So this plan is not just about people who live here, but it's about people who work here, and it's about our businesses. And a lot of our businesses depend on people who used to live here and now live in the East Bay. And if we could really make a lifestyle difference for them to be able to spend more time with their families, it would be opening up 580 westbound in the morning. That's about all I have. I just think it's really great to see this. So thanks to Ricardo and Omar for their work. And I know there was somebody else involved too. That's up, done.
Thanks, Linda. Just excuse me if I jump in and just see if anybody else, and I'm pointing to you on my screen, which is silly, but if anybody else would like to weigh in on any of the specific goals or policies or programs.
This is DJ. On the topic of 1.4, which is the boards and commissions, just piggybacking on Linda's comment, I had a thought that city could consider filling boards and commissions in the future with representatives from each of the council districts. The city's moving to a district-based city council, four councilors and an at-large mayor. And the council districts are mostly geographically based, but that might lead to, to be honest, most of our city is the geographic divisions in our city are also where you see the differences in age and race and things like that. So, that might be one way to encourage more diversity on the boards if you were to try and selectively make sure you get representation from different council districts.
Thank you.
Bill?
Kind of along those lines too. I was looking at the 1.5 policy on advisory committees am suggesting an additional program that I'm calling community or board and commission discussions to encourage input at meetings, including maybe more use of a workshop format. Where it's applicable, as part of that, for the city to clearly identify issues and actions and programs that they're considering, that are being considered well enough in advance that public input can be meaningful in shaping those. So I think there's probably quite a bit that can be done in terms of opening up governance by, bringing in more people throughout the city. And I think just one tag on, kind of echoing part of what Kate was saying, I think looking at cities, the city staff structure, and number one, preserving it in these hard times, but to try to identify, on an individual level, kind of who's responsible for what, and making sure the community is well aware of, they've got an Andrew Henning there. If homelessness is an issue they want to go to and find out about and have input into, but where do you go to on housing, for instance, or where do you go to on, other kinds of equity issues or other issues? So that's just a thought about, how to maybe increase the effectiveness of public input.
Thank you, Ben. I cannot see. Is you raising the hand? I cannot see.
Cecilia?
Oh, Cecilia. Sorry. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask another question about the survey that you did with the Canal Alliance. Was there an opportunity to put it out in a gender-focused way? Because I think some of those, just from my own cultural experience, some of those questions might be answered differently if it was from men or women. Or mothers and individuals?
Ricardo, you're on mute, I think.
So we didn't design the questions with the gender lens, although we talked about that, we wanted to do that. We worked really hard to contain it to 10 to 12 minutes, I think is what we said, because of the experience of the leaders had that their experience that they'd had in a previous survey about 4 years ago. They told us that that's about as much as folks are willing to give. I think it's, like I said, this is a beginning, and I would love to be able to see that. We did collect gender of the respondents, and so we could look at that, but not specific. And I think that there's kind of a several ways to unpack it. As you probably know, some folks in the community, Spanish is their second language, and it's not maybe not as they're not as dominant in Spanish as they would be in their native language. And so, and that has a gender dynamic as well. So the outside folks may be the men, and the inside folks might be the women. So all of that, we wanted to take it to consideration, but again, limited time, limited resources, and limited, we don't, it was definitely a big ask of people, you know, to have them fill this out and work with the interviewers to take their time. And so we wanted to be sensitive about, we are not paying these respondents, and we know that they're busy and they have lots of stuff going on. So I think in subsequent iterations, and my hope is that the neighborhood specific plan will be able to provide some of that data collection in the ways that you're describing and be much more nuanced about folks, right? So if there's a way to unpack that, because we know there are places where there are several men living in one apartment. And so we kind of have to unpack that issue around how much rent you're paying and what it represents of your income, because we know that we didn't really capture that as well as we could have.
Yeah, you know, a long, long time ago, just to add to the conversation of information, when the Canal Alliance was the Canal Community Alliance, and they used to do that community once a year community festival, we actually did a survey where people were at the festival, asked them stuff that had to do with how they got their information. And it was just marked how the women and the men responded so differently. So I just would suggest in the future that actually be a part of your strategy. Also, I just want to say that in the whole policy piece, if we could just keep our eyes on access. Access is really important. So, you know, inclusion is very intentional. And so you have to make sure people have access to what it is you're intending them to be a part of. And so just always, if we could keep that in mind, that, you know, access needs to be very intentional and to be inclusive. So just going to throw that in.
Bonnie, go ahead, Bonnie.
Okay, I actually have two questions. I'll try to make it real quick. One that just occurred to me is there a possibility to take advantage of the fact that so many people are now stuck at home and they're not working? Can people be tasked with making phone calls and gathering information, you know, data, making further progress on surveying people while everybody's locked down? That was one question. And the other question that came to my mind when Linda made a comment about the air quality in the canal, it's really an environmental justice issue. It seems to me that there are air quality issues there, but also so many of the students have gone to San Pedro School, which is on a very busy road where there's a lot of particulate in the air, and also then they, you know, they go to San Rafael High. So it's not just where they live, but where they're in school all day. And as their lungs are developing, it's an environmental justice issue for the education of the students from the canal. And so to the extent that we look at that, it's, you know, it's something that I think should be addressed. And, you know, how can we ensure, and this, I think part of it is that we are seeing during this particular time while everybody's locked down that the air quality being so much more clear because of the lack of traffic has made a difference in the health statistics. They're finding fewer heart attacks. So it's not just that the elderly are benefiting, or it's the asthmatics, the kids whose lungs are developing and playing on the playgrounds and being active, that this clearer air benefits. So it just seems to me that it's an environmental justice issue that should be thought about as we frame the issues for this element.
Yeah, I also want to point out that there is a technical report that was done in addition to the survey that looks specifically at environmental justice issues in San Rafael. There's a link to it on the website, and I believe we may have sent it as part of the original agenda packet. But that it's about 25 pages of data and maps that show the environmental conditions in different census tracts in San Rafael and look at the demographics of each tract to see what are the environmental justice issues in the city. And in many ways, conditions are much better in San Rafael than they are in cities like Richmond and East Oakland in terms of environmental justice. But there certainly are issues, and you know, we are addressing them through some of the policies in this element and in the safety element of the general plan also.
And Barry, if I may, just to add to Cecilia, the question about asking questions to male and female participants, I want to make sure you had to connect this work with the work that happened in 2013, I believe, with Voces de Canal, the report that was produced by many of the same leaders that participated in the survey. And Voces de Canal was a community research project that took almost a year. And that was a full participation in the community. So when you see what people were saying in 2013, 14 in that report, and what people are saying right now in the survey, there's a lot of the correlation to the same issues, right? So, and as Ricardo mentioned earlier, we only have a very short period of time to do all of this, and we really want to just to create a sample of has been dramatically changed since 2013 or 14 in terms of issues and priorities, and the answer is no. There's still the same problems and the same recommendations are coming from the community. So that was one thing. I want to also just comment in the policy very around having an effective and equitable communication. I want to make sure that we understand that just translating or bringing a translator is not enough. We know that with Ricardo, what we learned in this project is that we want to create these opportunities for people to participate to talk about city plan. Number one, people didn't know that it was a plan in place. They didn't even exist a plan. Number two, they didn't know how I can provide feedback in something that I don't even know that exists and that how it works and connect with our lives. So what we did before we actually jumped to the survey, it was a full education that Ricardo was providing to people. So once they are educated and knowledgeable about the topic, then I can provide feedback about, now I understand why the use of the land is different in the canal than other areas in San Rafael. Oh, now I understand what is all this density happening here is because many other policies exist in the city. So once we provide that context, people are able to provide feedback. So it's not just about translating or being a translator or having food or organizing the meeting at 6 p.m. It's bigger than that. And the other piece that I want to make sure to highlight is that there are people that even though you provide the context, they're not going to be able to participate in the city hall for 2-3 hours in a particular topic on the weekly basis, because they had to survive, they had to work. So there is some technology solutions out there that the city should be exploring and adopting, either as a text message base to collect information quickly from people. That's something that we are practicing because we cannot bring our own clients to participate in the ongoing basis and proactively. I'm sure the school had the same challenges as well. So we need to start thinking about what technology tools can we leverage and use to make sure that we have more voices on the table, either to identify what the problem is or to guide in the design of the solution.
Thanks. I just want to point out that we're at our 4 p.m. End point. A couple of people have to exit the call. And I wanted to see if Paul, if you wanted to add anything or make any comments or have anything to say before we turn it back to Omar to close this out.
I do. And I can tell you, first of all, thank you for sharing the survey findings. What's nice about this is we've already been setting the stage to put a program in the general plan to prepare a future more specific plan for the canal neighborhood. And I could tell you the information in the survey is really good. I think the topic areas in here are really good to touch on in the neighborhoods element that will form kind of a foundation for some of the topic areas that are going to need to be addressed in the specific plan. And I the more information like this we put in there to frame the purpose of a specific plan, the greater opportunity we have for getting funding to prepare such a plan at some point. I do also want to mention the COVID-19 issue. I think it's a very, it's something that we're going to have to address, Barry said, at the front end of our general plan. I think setting aside sort of this whole health question about this pandemic is we have the whole economic and financial fallout to all of this and how that's going to influence how a lot of these policies and their corresponding programs are going to be implemented, the timing of them, and also the financing of them. So those are things that we're going to just have to be conscious of when we start to put timeframes on programs to implement. So, this is an opportunity for us to at least acknowledge that in the plan.
Great. I think, Omar, if you'd like to make any final comments, we're probably needing to wrap up around now.
Well, I think you hear me a lot already. So all I want to say, thank you so much for participating. Thank you for caring about this topic. I think it's something that, as I mentioned before, it was important before COVID-19, definitely is important right now. And I hope that we use this energy right now that we have to make sure that we resolve those inequities moving forward. So stay healthy, stay well, and stay connected. Thank you for participating.
Thanks. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Leave me.